listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast. From marriage to menopause and margaritas, nothing is off the table. This is Cindy Goldenberg.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing well. Today, I wanted to talk about how to put yourself first, how to create new healthy boundaries, and basically how to live a more rewarding and fulfilling life. Recently, I did an instructional video about how to develop your intuition. I'm currently editing it and getting it ready to put it up as a link on my website and promote it. And hopefully you'll be interested in buying this class to not only develop your intuition, but to use it as a meditative tool and something that you can enjoy and listen to over and over again by becoming more aware of how your intuition works. But in this class, I point out that in order to become intuitive or to become relaxed and open to receive good things, which encompasses your intuition, you must be open to looking at and understanding your subconscious patterns. What does that mean? It means that you have to look at your behavior and your reactions and everything that you do as a learned pattern and question or analyze if it's still effective now. Most of our blocks come from subconscious patterns that we don't even know that we have because we are protecting ourselves from pain or fear or uncomfortable feelings. And they're all in our subconscious. Much of it is from our childhood. But like in the class and what I'm telling you today, is that when we understand these behavioral traits and concepts and we don't judge them, we just allow them and observe them, we can see how many of these learned repetitive patterns are actually blocking our greatness. They are blocking the law of attraction, of desire and outcome, of being conscious and mindful and making good choices and then going, what the hell? Nothing's coming my way. This doesn't work. I must be doing something wrong. So it really isn't about right or wrong, up or down. It's more about allowing yourself to see something and bring up feelings so that you can correct this pattern by identifying what it is you're doing. So the first thing I want to talk about is that most of our emotions and our defenses or our behavioral traits are actually protective mechanisms to protect the inner child, again, from shame or blame or lack of self-worth, or any kind of thing that we connotate as a negative thing. Now, when I say lack of self-worth, even I have a hard time saying this out loud because I think, me? Nuh-uh. My whole life, you know, being very tall at a young age and growing 4 or 5 inches around age, I don't know, 11 or 12 and being practically 6 foot when I was 13. I mean, I was looked at, I was stared at, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to bleach my hair, and if I'm going to be like this, I'm going to be fashionable, and I'm going to want to wear makeup and have nice clothes. But like any adolescent, I was insecure about a lot of things, and you want to fit in. But you do things to make yourself feel more confident or to compensate for your inadequacy or your fears, because it's all brand new. Well, in the same vein, can you imagine being a baby or an infant or a toddler and witnessing your parents or adults or people that are supposed to be in charge and know more than you? And you learn to be obligatory and you learn to put your needs second and third and fourth. And now you say, well, I have self-worth. I know that I'm a good person and I deserve things. But today I'm really talking about those covert, quiet, subtle inner urges of compensating, being right, being codependent, where you have to come in and fix or nurture or mediate. So, yes, it's easy to identify trauma or any kind of hurtful or painful incident or something embarrassing in our life. Of course, we've all been through it, but we don't have tools to get over it. But those things are easy to identify when we do our inner work and when we see who and what made us uncomfortable or hurt us or crossed the boundary or inflicted pain. And those things are hard to work through, but it's doable. And yes, they're big, and yes, they're painful. But what I'm talking about are little tiny nuances. And when we look at them and where we learned a lot of our traits and our behaviors, we may love our parents, or we may have gone through a lot of bullshit. And then we forgave them and we grew up and we looked at them differently, like I have. So I don't really want to put them down. We're not doing that. We're analyzing where these ideas and beliefs and reactions are rooted. And in order to do that, we must question ourselves, our parents, the adults around us, our upbringing, and society, and everything else, not to condemn it, not to go, aha, see, I told you, I came from a really effed up background or dysfunctional family, see, that's why. Do that if it helps, but when you're done, come back to this quiet, pragmatic, objective point of view. So the first thing I want you to understand is it's our nature to protect ourselves. As children and even adults, you have to understand that what we do is for the best, what we think is at that time. And if it works and it's been efficient, then we keep it. So we are really always protecting ourselves because it hurts to be abandoned or humiliated or shamed or ridiculed or punished. Of course it does. So then the next time we go, that ain't going to happen to me. Watch this. I'm going to put this wall up, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to be in complete effing control. So it'll be on my time and my way or the highway. Again, all these are great surviving traits, leadership traits, victorious traits, ones that we honor and validate. But there comes a time where we can invite them to see if we need to keep them. The first concept to look at is boundaries versus walls. There's a difference between boundaries, healthy boundaries, and walls of protection. We build a lot of walls on protection. We all do. Everything I'm telling you, I wouldn't have told myself. Everything I'm telling you, not only do I know through books and reading because I've experienced it, because I have done a lot of inner work and self-realization and mindfulness and self-correction for over 20 years. And I thought I was done, but I wasn't. And I have learned through experience, through prayer, through meditation, channeling, and helping so many people and in these angelic channelings for other people or even myself, these words and techniques and tools that I have seen to look at experiences from another point of view or to welcome them so the pain and the feeling can come forward and be transmuted are priceless. So it is these methods that, yes, in my video, it's the same thing that when you invite these feelings and subconscious patterns through the prompts that I give you in the video, you are bringing up things that are locked away in the dark corners of your soul. And when they are released, you are open, you are light, and you gravitate and attract wonderful, miraculous things, people, and experiences. And you are lifted, you are free, and you are unburdened. The same thing is through mindful choices and deliberate intention. So back to the boundaries versus walls. Healthy boundaries are healthy perimeters. They're made by a conscious, sound, and deliberate choice that helps us create a more healthy inner dialogue, which in turn creates a more positive, rich, and fulfilling experience. In other words, it makes us happy because we've removed the rationalized habit that attracted the conflict and the burden in the first place. Walls of protection are understandable, and they are expected methods of protection from pain and fear and abuse and shame, which all create predictable, safe, and familiar outcomes. So on one hand, you go, well, I don't want to build a wall. I want to be open. It's okay to be vulnerable. I know I'm safe. I know I'm loved. Yes, it's true. That's good to know. But again, I'm talking about getting up close and in the microscope. This isn't work. This is an opportunity to really expand on a higher level. And by the way, let me say this right now. I see this as a universal phenomenon. I see it through the politics and the polarity and the division, the black and white thinking, the good and bad, the us versus them. Again, remember, there's no such thing as energy going away. It just transmutes from negative, dark, and heavy to light. So everything that looks like it's going wrong is actually happening so it can come up and be looked at, observed, and either surrendered, prayed for, forgiven, or continued. In other words, your choices become more and more clear. The other thing I want to mention is you see everything from Oprah's book, What Happened to You, about your past, your trauma, instead of saying what's wrong with you, or why are you like the way you are, or any kind of mental health issue. These concepts are now becoming common vernacular, safe discussions. Everybody, from Michael Phelps to Prince Harry, everyone has depression or mental health or a painful past. Everybody's been through something. Imagine having a broken air conditioner, a broken car, a broken appliance, a broken building. I mean, how do you fix it without tools? You need the tools, and you need the right tools. So how do you know how to invite repair or healing if you don't have tools, or if you were told that tools were never necessary, that you just got to deal with it, and that's the way life goes? So by talking about what we call mental illness or mental health, it's not an illness, it's everybody. It's how our psyche works. We go into a handful of protective mechanisms, and they're all found in these walls. And you can get metaphysical and say it's the heart wall, or it's the chakras, or it's the soul. That's good too. there are movement and chants and sounds and aromatherapy and exercise and consciousness that we could all invoke and move that energy and awaken it to transmute it. We can also just talk about it and say, let's try some new ways to invite what we don't know because it's causing ineffective behavior. Or it's causing us, yes, we're happy, but we get into a certain plateau in our life and we kind of feel like, what the hell? These little synchronistic patterns or these people or things are really bothering me. Like Oprah said, and how she's being interviewed about her book. Of course, we all know she's been sexually abused. She's had this abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse, all this kind of thing. And she's worked through it and she's shared everything for, you know, 25, 30 years. But she said those little habits, even when she was extremely successful, of trying to please people, not consciously, but on a subconscious level, of looking for acceptance or trying to do something in a better way, was really to avoid the pain of getting beaten by a belt or a switch, you know, a twig or a branch from a tree, being beaten and hurt by her grandmother. Although she loves her grandmother, although her mother abandoned her, but her grandmother loved her and took care of her. And like another popular book that's out now is Sharon Stone. And it's concise in the way she describes it's normal in the Midwest to grow up and if you didn't finish your chores, you got a beating. So when we see these things, and they don't have to be horrific, they can be just, oh, you're going to get in trouble and you're going to get hit. We're going to knock some sense into you or slap the crap out of you. But these little things that are in our subconscious now, a lot of our behaviors, we are reacting to that where we go, like Oprah says, I don't want to do anything or ruffle any feathers because I don't want to get that spanking. I don't want to get hit. I don't want to get... But I will go into these details more. But just kind of understand and let that wash over you that, again, we're talking about in our walls protective mechanisms, and they are healthy. Like I said, they are expected, and they are predictable, and they are familiar because we, as children, adolescents, and even adults, we want to know what we want to know, and we'd rather take it on the chin than to face the unknown, because to face the unknown or not know what's going to happen creates a lot of anxiety. And then we can go into that. A lot of people have anxiety and you go, oh, well, you're stressed at work. No, things one on one doesn't equal two. We're talking subconscious. We're going into the walls. So back to this concept. So even though they are predictable, safe, and familiar outcomes, they're okay. But they also create cycles of contempt, misery, dysfunction, anger, and frustration. Now, we've all felt those, but then how often do we do it? How often do we cycle it? How often do we put up with it? Or how often do we do it? So these are a lot of codependent traits and explanations, and I am going to read a lot from Codependent No More, the classic book by Melody Beattie, because I just find it refreshingly honest and concise and clarifying and freeing every time I pick it up and open up to any page, especially the ones I've marked. But again, these familiar cycles of contempt and misery, dysfunction and anger and frustration create eventual hopelessness and despair. And on a codependent realm, it makes us either the person who is going to fix or nurture or listen to those who are broken. Or another codependent feature is that we become the one who barks, or we are combative, or we are political, or we are righteous, or we are whatever, or we are smothering or in control. In other words, we're all these things to a certain degree, but like I said, we come to a point where we must invite and analyze why we're doing this and if we need to continue. Another concept about creating new boundaries is knowing versus not knowing. Like I said, how can you fix something like a motor or a car or air conditioner without the correct tools? Look back as a child and realize that we were conditioned to be powerless. We were never taught healthy boundaries. Now, again, if they were overt and abusive and beatings or sexual abuse or trauma or just emotional neglect, you have a parent that says, did you do your homework or did you do this or did you do that? And they don't say, I love you or I'm proud of you. They're not hitting you. They're not starving you. They're not slapping you upside the head. But they are conditioning you to become aware that you are only there to react to their control, their need to be in control, their need to make you feel powerless, their need to make you be reactive, their need to be the authority figure that knows more and you know nothing. And then you're also being conditioned to be available, to be that target, and to be always submissive and obligated to their questions that make you feel defensive and shameful and inadequate. All in one look, all in one breath, or no look or no breath, or walking past you, not interested in you or your homework or anything else. Or it could be a sibling, or it could be somebody else, or it could be an awful boss or a teacher or someone that you like or respect or thought you should, and you get nothing back. And then you grow up and it's called in-laws. That's a joke, but it's real. So going back to this, we were never taught healthy boundaries. Here is an example. A parent or an authority figure tells you, hey, I want you to do something you don't want to do, like be here and listen to this bullshit, or answer my questions, or let me create doubt in you. But while I'm doing this, I want you to like it, and I even want you to pretend that you want to do it. So in that subtle message, you are learning to avoid any of your desires or needs, and in fact, postpone them, discard them, push them down, and make sure that you oblige to someone else of authority and not you. In fact, you don't even have authority, and it's not a good thing to have. So those little messages are being imprinted. So as a result, you lose the ability to say no. You lose the ability to say, wait a minute, I feel betrayed. You become a people pleaser. You become anxious and don't know why. You become the victim. You become the one who's bullied. Or you become the bully. Or you become the combative one. Or you become the one that lashes out. And then together, that person meets the other person and goes into a relationship and a hand and a glove. So not all codependency is the same, but it comes from narcissist defense mechanisms. You don't necessarily have to have a narcissistic father or mother. That's kind of more obvious to point out. Everyone has narcissistic defense mechanisms. Those are not healthy boundary defense mechanisms. Those are unhealthy, toxic ones. When you are narcissistic going, this is what I want. I didn't do anything. I'm not accountable. So they don't have to be narcissistic per se, but they can exercise narcissistic behavior through their control. So as you look at yourself or look at your parents or look at the certain things, and you can ask prompts and sit quietly or listen to a little meditative music or say a little prayerful intention. And your higher team, God, angels, even when I say this, I feel my head swirl. I start to see color on the wall. You're connected to this. This is who you really are. You will be answered. What kind of prompts or what kind of questions that you have, they'll give you the questions. And you can find out why you do what you do or how you feel about certain things. So when you do that, you must look at what you bought into. Look at how you were encouraged to sacrifice, to say no to your joys, your expectations and desires through guilt, shame, and neglect. And realize all of us, really, these become habitual and consistent behavioral traits because we do it in order to stop the pain and go, I'm not dealing with this effed up shit anymore. I'm going to do this and I'm going to be in charge. Or I'm going to be this way. Or so many things, like I've said, growing up with an alcoholic father, he wasn't alcoholic all the time. I mean, he wasn't drunk all the time. Those are easy. Those are easy to go, like, that's really fucked up behavior. Even as a child, I knew, well, that's something sick, but he's a good man and it's his problem. But I always had compassion, but I had this detached observation as I would see him hurt or beat my mother, and his father did the same, and so on and so on. But I'm not saying this as poor me, pity me. I'm just sharing with you my observations. But what I'm talking about is more subtle things. So when we look at this need to be available and this need to understand or negotiate and nurture and teach and rationalize and explain and help people, that was my defense mechanism to grow up and be the teacher, to grow up and be in control, to be the leader. At first, I thought it was just because I was taller than all the children or I had the best, newest bike. So I always went first and everyone followed me. And I always had extra money and nickels to go to the 7-Eleven and buy candy, especially for those who didn't. And I was always the teacher when we play school. And I was always first. So growing up, I see these little nuanced things, but that way I felt in control. These things made me really good at what I did. I went after things. I had intention. I didn't buy into shortcomings. I went and danced in Vegas. I auditioned at things. I tried. I went into uncomfortable places where I really wasn't very good dancers compared to someone else. Or I couldn't sing, but I'd get up and try, and I would go, and I'd do it over and over and get flat tires and be late for, I remember one time a TV show that we taped at CBS, Tony Orlando and Don, and my car broke down. And I had to call my mom to rent one and usually get fired. And I went in and I pushed the door open, the stage door, and all these people were in there, including the dancers. And All in the Family was being filmed across the hall. So Rob Reiner was in there taking a break and watching the rehearsals of all of us pretty girls. And I was late and I put my bathing suit top and bikini and fishnet stockings and high heels on in the restroom and came running in. And I had a little sarong on around my waist. But as I pushed the stage door open to get in, my thumb got hooked into my bra strap, which unhooked the back, and my top flew across the room. And I thought, what the fuck? I could be humiliated, but they're breasts and they're cute and I'm 18. What the hell? And I'm late. And I walked over and I picked it up and I tied it back on and I put my arms back through the thing and then I put my hands on my hip and I said, my car broke down. I'm sorry I'm late. And I can remember the choreographer rolling his eyes and asking someone to teach me the routine, which was quite easy. But I'm sure I gave a thrill to a lot of men that day. But that's a little side story. I had confidence. I had to overcome anything. I couldn't let distractions take me away from whatever I wanted to do in life. So my defense and codependency to be in control, to be first, to be noticed, to be heard, especially in the 70s when, you know, you're treated like a piece of meat, and then go back to law school, which was a big flipping joke to a lot of people, especially men, but the tides were turning, and there were other tall, beautiful blondes and pretty women and nice girls. And in my second year of law school, there was more women than there were men. So all of these traits that I had to become hateful, spiteful, I love you, Dad, but fuck you, Dad, and fuck the alcoholism, and Jesus Christ, I don't need this shit, and you spend money, and blah, 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 and you do this, and you do this, and all the victim that I was, and I was, all the unfair injustice, and it was. I deserve to be that, and I deserve to be that kick-ass, all right, watch this. And then as I grew up and had children, and if something was wrong or unfair, or something hurt my child, or I had to be an advocate for school, who else do you want? You want a kick-ass tiger mom, and I'm proud of it. So everything that I've ever accomplished, which is so triumphant, and a lot of it miraculous, is because of this attitude. So I want you to look at yourself and praise yourself and say, but for that, I became this. But now go deeper and inside and look at these consistent habitual codependency traits of always being available to understand, to negotiate, nurture, teach, rationalize, explain. So, what does that mean? I love my husband. I've been with him 40 years, but in the last decade or more of the consistent fighting and bantering, I have now realized, and we all are working on it in therapy, loving, identifying, even at this stage of the game, even at this age, all the little borderline tendencies, all the neglect. Here he is, an older man, a senior, and seeing and identifying all his reactive behavior to this narcissistic defense mother or this narcissistic defense father, and the alcoholism and the codependency and the anger and the frustration of the wife and then the parents and then the fighting and then this and the panic and the anxiety. So how does that manifest today with he and I? Subtle, subtle patterns of, yeah, I love you. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah, I do all this. But at the same time, it has taken years after the children are gone and they're grown up, after I see habits that I had that I don't want them to inherit, but they did, after their own problems and their own relationships and their own broken hearts, of their people-pleasing and their disappointments, do I see myself being the one who's always rationalizing the parent or the bad behavior or my husband's, not bad behavior, but behavior that I don't like, that I have asked, please don't do that. That makes me feel XYZ. Please stop that. It makes me upset XYZ. Stop doing this XYZ. Why don't you understand XYZ? Because I have a disorder, a compulsive impulse to sabotage anything healthy and loving. And I do it quietly and I manipulate by just asking you, what are you doing? Where did you go? What did you spend? What is this? What is that? And you answer and it's not enough. So I must be insistent. What is this? What is that? What is this? What did you do? And what these patterns I have now seen in the quiet of our sunset years in our relationship alone together are narcissistic defense and patterns in his wall of don't come near me, I'd rather have conflict, I want to create doubt, I want to irritate and provoke you more than I do want to receive your love. And it's become very clear, and even to him, and we had to learn tools, and he had to learn tools to understand that his defense mechanisms haven't ever been dealt with, and they're still bleeding into your older years, and they always have been bleeding into a marriage and a relationship. But I was too busy raising kids or being active or working or doing whatever it is. Also, using my teaching and nurturing and all those, quote, codependent, loving, I understand where you're coming from. I can see it in your aura. I feel your pain. I channel you as a child. I channel this awful experience that you had, the sexual abuse. I am so glad and appreciative and grateful of my gift that I can help heal you. Everyone who has been through pain, our pain is someone else's gift. Everyone who is a great teacher or great mentor or great drug addict, what is it? I know someone that is going to med school and learning to be a paramedic and is learning from this great doctor who was a drug addict and alcoholic and all these things and had all this violence and everything else. Our problems are others' gifts. My issues, my history, my enjoyment of nurturing and teaching and inspiring is what I enjoy. But I now have to realize that that joy has also become an addiction to feel good and powerful about myself, and that I have been available to many people who are very damaged or broken or consistent or can't or aren't at a stage where they can receive love. And I keep insisting, just like my husband keeps insisting and insisting and insisting, and I say, please don't do that. But I do it in a different way where, but I know how to help. But I know what you need. I can feel your pain. I'm good at this. I know what to do. I mediate. I solve. But now I do it so much. And I now see in the areas of, even though I am an expert and I have all these trophies because I've been victorious in so many ways in my life because of it, I don't need to do it because it's now causing me pain. And it's causing me pain and sadness and frustration because I realize in the deep subconscious, I am protecting my inner child from pain of worthlessness. Or that maybe my mom and dad didn't love me because they were hollering. I know in my mind that's not true. I know I was relished. I know that so much more than even my husband and his parents. I felt love my whole life. But the subconscious is things we don't know. And there is somewhere trauma and pain. And I'm using my need to rescue and help as my temporary fix of power. And by constantly doing it, I also realize I've been in so many situations where people have taken advantage of me, where, oh, I know their background and I can overlook it, or I end up rationalizing their irrational behavior or their cruel behavior or their insane behavior or their combative behavior. And it isn't about my relationship with them. It's about my relationship with myself. Because one day I had to ask about many people and many friends and many relatives and many in-laws and many, many people, how do I feel when you say this? How do I feel when you do this? Well, let's see, I'm 64, and I thought 30-something years ago that if I went along and I was just polite and I would be the good daughter, or I would be the good wife, or I would just go, well, I understand where you're coming from and I'm kind and nice, that it'll all work out. It didn't. I never got love and respect from some of these people. My entire life, I can tell you, at 64 years old, quit trying to get acceptance or love, even if you're related through marriage or not, from someone who is incapable of loving and respecting themselves, no less you. In other words, you give and you give and you give, and you think one day they'll give back, but you're going to end up empty-handed and pissed off and bitter. And then you go, shit, they won. So if you can look at it and go back, if I could tell myself at a younger age, quit trying. You don't have to be an ass. You don't have to match them. But you don't need to constantly act and pretend to be nice and go along and do what you're told. You can say, fuck you, silently, or just do something for yourself rather than react to someone who you think knows more, or because they're older or they're more powerful than you, that you must abide. If it bothers you, it bothers you. And believe me, within 30, 40 years, it's going to come right to your nose and smack you in the face. And it's going to be quiet. And it's going to be a realization that you don't feel good. That you feel like you've been compromised and putting up with things. And you feel the same way you did as a child, where you're going, I just have to go along. I have to pretend, or I have to rationalize, or I know what they're going through. I'm tired of making excuses for everybody else. I just want to relax, have a peaceful day, have peaceful things, open up my email, open up my social media, and not get pissed off. And I thought, well, how's that going to happen? It had to happen because I had to say, why are you doing this? Why do you constantly look at and submerge yourself with toxicity? You have to let go and detach. So why? It isn't because it's so obvious that it's toxic. It's because it's triggering feelings that you had as a child that you are tolerating and sacrificing your own needs. And that gagging, nauseous, subconscious bubble will come knocking on your door. And that's what I'm talking about, is those inner urges of feelings you must allow, and you must see your behavior if you are constantly supporting this codependency or if you're creating it for someone else. So I'm going to read some of these things from Codependent No More. And there's so many lists, I can't read them all. But it just gives you an understanding that, again, we've all been raised to react and get along or survive or take care of or parent our parents, blah, blah, blah. And we've all been doing the wrong things, but for the right reasons. But here are some traits. And if you find yourself like this, understand these are codependent traits. For instance, do you find yourself saying yes when you mean no? Do you do things that you don't really want to be doing? Or you do more than your fair share of the work and doing things for other people that they're really capable of doing for themselves? Or do you find it easier to feel and express anger about injustices done to others rather than injustices done to yourself? In other words, do you justify your anger? And then this one I identify with. You know, you always want to give advice because you know better, because you're older, because you're spiritual, because you're blah, blah, blah. But do you feel angry when you're not heard or people don't take your advice, that's a big one. So that is a point that you are codependent and you are insisting on your way or the highway. The other thing is, do you overcommit yourself? Do you blame others for their... Try it again. Do you blame others for being in the position that you're in? Are you not accountable or ever responsible? It's always someone else's fault. Do you believe that other people are making you crazy? Do you feel angry, victimized, unappreciated, and used? Hello, I love that one. Do you come from troubled, repressed, or dysfunctional families? Do you reject compliments or praise? Or do you get depressed from a lack of compliments or praise? Do you feel different from the rest of the world? Do you think you're not quite good enough? And do you take things personally? That's a big one. Again, I'm not talking about what's on the outside. I'm not talking about a personality test to get a job. I'm talking about the quiet conversation between you and you in the middle of the night. Do you expect yourself to do everything perfectly? Are you a perfectionist? Do you have a lot of shoulds? Do you have a lot of guilt? Do you live with shame? Or do you tolerate shame? Do you rationalize shame from other people, including those you love? Do you try to help other people live their lives instead of yours? Well, I have to laugh. Do you try to control events and people through helplessness or guilt or coercion or threats or advice giving or manipulation or domination? That pretty much covers it, doesn't it? Do you ignore problems? Are you in denial? Do you act like things aren't really happening? Do you stay so busy that you don't want to think about anything, especially yourself? You do a lot of busy work. You do a lot of workouts. You are a workaholic. You are probably in denial. The other thing is the dependency part of codependency shows up like, do you often seek love from people incapable of loving? And do you rationalize for them because you understand their background? Just know that we as codependents feel like good caretakers, and we feel safe when we're giving. We feel guilty and uncomfortable when someone gives to us, or when we do something to meet our own needs, or even though we do it because, God damn it, I deserve a facial and spa and a massage. It isn't like a welcome gift. It's almost like, watch this, I'll do it, like an act of defiance. But what this does, what these traits show, is that this promotes anger. And the worst aspect of caretaking is that we become and stay victims. Most of us aren't even aware of what we're doing, and most of us believe that we're truly helping. But some of us believe that we have to rescue because deep down inside, there is such a low lack of self-worth. And we rescue because, in all actuality, without even knowing, we don't love ourselves or care about ourselves. And caretaking provides a really good hit of self-worth and power, and it's just an addiction. So we feel compelled to do things over and over in this way just to prove how good we are. And we rescue because we don't feel good about other people either. We justify and we decide other people simply can't be held responsible for themselves. But like in Codependent No More by Melody Beattie, she says, although this may appear to be true, it's simply not a fact. Unless a person has brain damage or a physical serious impairment or is an infant, that person can be responsible for him and herself. So look at what you've learned and been conditioned to, that you decided to cope and survive the best way you could, but that you learned to never say no or have any kind of boundary. So then how do we get one? How do we stop people-pleasing? How do we apologize? How do we keep letting people hurt us and disappoint us? We do by realizing first that we're doing it. The other thing is, the other people who maybe may not be like us, the rescuers and the nurturers, but the people who have anger issues and they're combative and they'd rather fight and invite conflict versus peace. I cannot tell you how many best friends and girlfriends and partners and people that I have had relationships with because I knew, you know what, they're really good at what they do, or they're inspirational speakers, or they're authors, but they don't have any friends. They only have clients, or they like to lead, or they like to do this, but inside, I really feel a little sorry for them. Or I see that this person had such a horrendous childhood and that they're really talented in this way, but I could help this way and I'll just overlook that way. And then I'll blah, blah, blah. I'm like bees to honey, or honey to bees, or what is it? I just can't help myself. And now I see and analyze that this is always ends up where it comes a day where my love and my joy and my friendship is not only attacked, and I'm attacked, where I take it personal and I go, what the fuck was that? What happened? And then they go, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. And then I realize I didn't know about different kinds of mental conditions or a bipolar or depressed state or a borderline personality that has to sabotage anything good and has an impulse to question and doubt and create an abandonment and create conflict because of their own self-worth. And even though I knew on a spiritual level that's what they were doing, it wasn't until I studied it and saw it in a clinical level, on a clinical way, that I could realize that it's not me, it's actually the way the condition works. So when you're around these people who would rather fight than invite peace or conflict, why are you around them if it bothers you and makes you feel uncomfortable? They're not taking your advice. Do you ever ask yourself, I wish they would stop. I wish they weren't like that. I love them, but I don't like that. But the bottom line is codependents look strong, but they feel helpless. And again, I'm talking about that inner urge to compensate or rationalize or justify someone else's behavior. So the first step for change in identifying what you tolerate in others, where you don't really have boundaries, even though you love someone or they're your friends or coworkers or anything else, or is it you? What are you doing? Are you self-sacrificing? Are you ignoring your inner child? Is it making you upset to constantly feel bullied or provoked? What are you ignoring in yourself? You got to look for these things, and the first step is awareness. Just be aware of it. Don't condemn it, just be aware of it. And the second step is acceptance. I accept myself and I honor my journey and I forgive myself for not knowing any better and understand that these nuances are subtle. I've had these quotes for many weeks and I've saved them. And I really do feel, besides affirmations and releasements, it's good to read something, as corny and cliche as it may be, but it puts you in perspective, especially if you're going through a lot of pain and frustration, or you're in an uncomfortable situation where you need to remind yourself every hour that you're okay and that you're being guided and that this is happening for a reason. read these things, post these things, get on some kind of thing where they come through your texts, where you can read them and be inspired. Here's some of my favorites. And then I learned the spiritual journey had nothing to do with being nice. It was about being real, authentic, and having boundaries, honoring my space first, others second. And in this space of self-care, being nice just happened. It flowed, not motivated by fear, but by love. Another one, you're at a point in your life where you should remove yourself from people who hurt you more than they love you, drain you more than they replenish you, bring you more stress than they do peace, and try to stunt your growth rather than clap for it. You've done enough trying to make it work with people. Another one, remove expectations from people and you will remove their powers to hurt your feelings. If you don't like something, just take away its only power, which is your attention. Another one, if you're afraid that establishing a boundary with someone will upset them, then that is proof that the boundary needs to be established. And lastly, if other people treat you with the silent treatment, recognize that this is abuse. This is used by emotionally immature people who never learned how to communicate. You don't need to tolerate this behavior. It's not needing space or taking time or cooling down or being an authority figure or older or knowing. It's actually a temper tantrum. It's punishment and it's manipulation. Know that you do not need to settle for this or rationalize this if it's someone you love or you're related to, or that you're just close to. You can love someone, but not their choices. You can love someone and understand their difficulties and their background and their backstory or their upbringing. But it's not your responsibility to fix. It's not your responsibility to tolerate, because you deserve better. So you must make this awareness and acceptance deliberate intentions. Examine the motives of others. Being controlled by others can be abusive and emotional manipulation. Examine your own reactions to other people, including yourself. Learn to listen to yourself. Do you rationalize others' bad or ineffective or hurtful behavior? Or do you look at it over your life and go, well, that's because they were always there? Or you know how marriage is, you got to hang in there and you got to make things work and everything's give and take. That's rationalizing. You don't need to do that. Are you turning a blind eye? Are you tired of being triggered? Does this trigger or feeling bother you? And do you want to continue tolerating this? I'm going to say this, and I'm going to use it as an example. So it's not anything against being Republican or Democrat, but I am actually traumatized by enduring the last few years of the Trump administration. I realize through everything I've just told you, and again, this is my testimony, and this is my story to inspire you, so take the parts that work for you. I grew up with a father who was poor, ignorant, uneducated, and mostly abandoned by his own father, which turned him into a raging teenager, which turned him into a violent person. That violence proved to be a good thing to be a Marine and fight in the Korean War. It made him victorious. It gave him medals. It gave him purpose. It gave him a life, a home, a trade, a job. But this pain of being abandoned and not loved and craving love, and that anger and that frustration manifested all the time in violence and domestic abuse and eventually alcoholism. And what that was is, for me as a child and even as an adult, him basically saying, I'm so fucked up, I don't know why I'm so angry, but I can't help it, but I certainly can't receive your love, and every time you do, I'll sabotage it. And what's an example? Every time I make money, I have to go gamble it. Every time something good happens, I have to fuck it up. So having that be there made me totally powerless, but then to get my power, I had to be in control. But it also brought in things that I didn't even know. I mean, intellectually, I thought, yeah, I deal with it. But until these last few years of seeing a president bully, take control, target, unaccountable, no apologies, make fun of handicap, nationalities, Latin, Black, Asian, with glee and joy and expressions and a basic message of fuck you, I do what I want. Maybe that doesn't bother you, and I'm not being political. I'm telling you my truth. I'm nauseous when I say this, and it has nothing to do with Trump. And it has nothing to do with politics. It has everything to do with my own childhood triggers of a father who opened his mouth, drunk or not, with controlling, bigoted, racial slurs is a polite word. And grow up and hear it over and over and over and over and over again. And it wasn't that it just put down someone Black or someone less than. And I grew up and I saw as a child Martin Luther King killed. And I remember as a little girl seeing John Kennedy and his casket, and then being a little older and seeing Robert Kennedy killed. So seeing these horrific things and feeling this powerlessness against race and having a father grow up and be violent, knowing at any moment, I love you, but I can kill you. I love you, but I can fucking take your head off. I love you, but I'm a maniac and a monster. I love you, but I can say what I want and you can't do a goddamn thing. And I love you, but as I watch TV, I can say something about a Black singer. I love you, but I can say something about that gay man. I love you, but I will provoke you because I can. And that was my epiphany. That person, that child that had to sit daily, hourly for years and quietly soak up this ignorant abuse and toxic vomit, even in the best of days, even through having children, my entire life was predicated on tolerating vile, cruel, unbearable ignorance. And that triggers me. So when I see people go, yay, 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 or I need to be heard, or fuck you, I want to fight, or I want to fight for this cause, or I want to fight for that. And granted, I did when I was young and triumphant, and I'm glad I did. But I'm of an age where I see through it. and it's transparent, has nothing to do with the politics or the cause. It has everything to do with you being inauthentic and hollering and being angry because you are hurt and in pain and you don't want love from me. And I want to love you, and I have to stop trying because I'm the one getting triggered of trying to make it work and act like this doesn't bother me. So these codependent traits, these are the things that we can invite, those subtle urges, and you too will have epiphanies. And you can look and ask, what part of your inner child are you protecting? Are you the abuser, or are you the one rescuing the abused? Identify your beliefs and behaviors. Look at your parents and look at your upbringing and question in order to heal. My father went to AA and became a wonderful, loving man, and he let that shit go. And I'm glad he did. And then we could talk, and then I could yell, and then I could cry, and then I could swear, and I did for years. And I always loved my dad, but then he felt it because he let that shit go. But in the meantime, when I have an urge, and it's an urge like seeing a dog run towards the street, and it's in my stomach, and it's very conscious now that I want to say something or help someone, or I want to avoid conflict and mediate, or I want to pretend that that doesn't bother me, that I'm in a situation and this isn't good. I don't have to make a ruckus, but I have these feelings and I have these urges to mediate, overcome, nurture, be in denial, or calm it down or fix. And they are real, but I look at them as scars and I realize that it isn't real. It isn't this present moment. The present moment, I have a choice, and so do you. So remind yourself that it's okay not to know exactly what you want, but to identify what you no longer need. Learn to say no. Learn to say no and have outer boundaries. I'm not available for this. Learn to say no to your inner voice. What do you say about yourself? What do you rationalize about yourself? What do you rationalize about someone else? Learn to say no and quiet down that inner critic. Remind yourself you deserve to be loved and feel loved. Allow that higher power and angels, God, universe, all of that to show you new ways to feel love. Quit trying to ask for love from those who can't do it. It's okay. It was noble, but let go. Know with regular practice, your choices and feelings and awareness will become more and more clear. You'll become very impatient. You'll become very irritable. You'll become very intolerant, and you'll see very clearly why. And at the same time, you'll know that you are going in the right direction by saying no to what you don't want, and you're effortlessly freeing yourself to be happy and open. Be conscious of why you're walking away. Know why you say no. Know why you say no to your inner critic. Know why you say no to someone else. I can't make it this time. I don't want to make you feel bad, but please keep asking. I may join you another time. Be honest and open in your communication. Trust that you are capable of making good decisions. And be patient. Time is your friend. These awarenesses, these conscious epiphanies, these things that you put into practice, invite them and be patient with yourself. And make lists and see your accomplishment. Write about what you used to think and look a month from now that you don't feel that way anymore and how effortless it is. Recognize how much you've grown. Plant the seed. It will flourish. Recognize your changes and be mindful with your words and thoughts, especially for yourself. Keep up your affirmations, read positive things, learn to love yourself. Seek support and therapy from people or a professional, and accountability. Be accountable. It's not about blame. It's being a participant. It's being fully aware. Remind yourself that everyone has a backstory, including you. Everyone's pain is someone else's gifts. In other words, not everybody, whatever we've gone through can help other people, so you can still nurture and inspire without having it be the wrong kind of an addictive feel. Everyone's been tangled in some kind of codependency, but just realize that it's not necessary to continue. Allow yourself to say, I feel a certain way. Allow yourself to express your feelings. Allow yourself to say, hey, I need this. And know that other people are going to have a different point of view, and that's okay. You don't have to agree on everything. It doesn't have to come to a perfect resolve. Know that it is perfect in the way that it is when you put yourself first and your feelings first. When you do that, you realize that you don't need to correct or fix or repair anyone, because that's God's job. That's His responsibility. Say your affirmations regularly. I'm willing to receive peace. I'm willing to receive joy, success, happiness. Make lists about defining that. What does peace mean? What does joy mean? What does success look like? You can always change your mind, but get in the habit of being descriptive, of using your mind, envisioning, pretending, imagining, because you're perpetuating your truth and you're doing you, not anyone else. You're taking care of you, not fixing others. Be thankful that these uncomfortable situations and thoughts and feelings, as sick as they may have made you feel, that they came up, because that's your divine team bringing it forward in order to get transmuted, in order to make room for everything good that's coming your way. What we receive is up to us, because we co-create. How we receive is up to God. Trust the process and know you are always in good hands. And then I leave you with two quotes from Buddha. You, yourself, just as much as anyone in the entire universe, deserve your love and affection. And lastly, love yourself and the rest will follow. Thank you so much. Stay healthy. Be focused. Be mindful. Make good choices. And know that you deserve to be loved now and always.
You have been listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast with intuitive expert Cindy Goldenberg. To learn more or stay connected, be sure to visit www.cindygoldenberg.com.